and welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, St. Vincent de Paul, and many others. Joining us now, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. Been a while since we've had a chance to chat, Mayor.
It has, but we're well into the summer now, finally.
Well, let me ask you about, since you're the headline all over the state today, you're really the first candidate, or potential candidate, I should say, that the governor has responded to. You released a statement, or you made a statement on over the weekend that you're reconsidering running for governor.
A lot has happened in the last 3-4 months, which as we started getting discussions about candidates, a number of people outside of Madison and Dane County have suggested that I run, say they'd love to see me be the governor, and it's something that I am now considering.
The governor has responded to your to that statement, saying that he'd love to have that battle. He's an unabashed throwback to the 1960s radical liberal out there, Walker said. I'd love to have that battle. What would make him think that you're a radical?
I don't know, but name calling is not going to get him reelected. And if that's the best he can do, which probably it is, I think that election prospects of removing him from office are very good.
Well, one positive he had through the years, if you could say one thing positive about him as a public figure, was that he kept his cool. But I'm sure you saw about a month ago him completely overreacting to Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson asking him a question about health care, a very legitimate question, and Scott Walker completely lost his cool and rambled on for a good 2-3 minutes, throwing out again a long list of non sequiturs.
Well, he's got 6 years behind him, and tragically for the people of Wisconsin, very little to show for it, particularly in terms of the economic prospects of the state. We're way behind our competitive states in the Midwest. We're way behind the rest of the nation. And there's folks in Wisconsin who are saying the economy's getting better. People are being employed. People are being employed in quality jobs. What happened to our state? What happened to our part of the state?
You know, it's not simple. There are broadband issues. There are issues of livability. Madison is a great place to live. A lot of young people want to come here because it's got the infrastructure of bike paths and mass transit, that type of thing that maybe some communities around the state don't have. Where do you think the governor's missed the boat on rural and mid-sized city economic development?
Well, the first is making for strong schools. You get two benefits from having strong public schools. The first is you end up with educated kids who are going to grow up and do well for their community and their state, not just for themselves. And secondly, they're going to come back and they're going to stay in their communities, because that's the kind of schools that they want for their kids.
And you think the diversion of money from the public school system to these vouchers has cost these communities dearly?
You know, Sly, you and I have been doing this for a long time. When I was first elected office in the 1970s, I made the observation of something I'd quickly learned, and that is that there is nothing a mayor can do to make a great city that's as important as having a great public school system. That defines your community. And so you not only have the responsibilities of managing the city, but you've got the responsibility of supporting the schools and making for great schools in your community. It's so obvious. And the neglect of the Walker administration in that regard is beyond description. And so now, you know, it's sort of like he bulldozed all the schools in the state with his policies for 6 years, and now he wants to come back and build a shack. Well, we can do better than that. And I think what we've done in Madison in terms of schools, in terms of transportation, and specifically and most importantly, in regards to creating private sector jobs and creating a robust local economy, that can be duplicated around the state. Scott Walker is ideologically locked into his position. He can't do any better.
When will you make a decision on whether you run for governor?
Well, I don't know. There's no rush to it. There's plenty of time. So I'll be talking to people who've given me good advice in the past, listening to folks who encouraged me to run, and then make a decision.
And you have said that the other people in the field won't determine whether you run yourself. Is that correct?
I think there's plenty of good candidates. If I don't run, there's plenty of good people who can defeat the governor. If I make a decision to run, it will be based on whether or not I believe that I can be the best candidate to beat him.
Right now, you are mayor of Wisconsin's second largest city. There's some interesting things going on. Can you explain to me what this rapid response hubbub is about? I don't understand. I've read the articles. I still don't quite understand. The point of it. And I'll be honest with you, and maybe I have a chip on my shoulder on this because I didn't agree with the money being spent to do the whole digging into the police department. But boy, that $400,000 or whatever it was would go a long way in dealing with some of the other problems that we have. And I'm just wondering.
Now you're talking about, there's two items with a budget tag about that amount. One was the study of the police department.
Right.
That's what you're talking about, right?
Right.
All right. That's separate from the rapid response.
Right. No. I'm just saying that money would have, you know, the city doesn't, some people are aware of this, but the city doesn't have an infinite amount of money.
That's certainly true.
And some of the people that were calling for studying the police department are jumping all over you about, you know, not getting this funded right away and getting this up with the click of a finger. But, and obviously you've got your disagreements with the police chief over the number of officers. Everybody wants their program funded immediately, and I don't think it's possible.
Well, the study will that the council decided to fund is going to be back to us at the end of this year. And what I'm just looking to is whether or not, now that they've gone ahead and funded it and taken other steps along the way, are they going to listen to the results of the study? I think that's going to be interesting.
Now, why do you say, you always, whenever you say something, it has a purpose. Do you have a reason to believe that if the study comes out positive for the Madison Police Department, that they may disregard it? Is that what you're alluding to?
It is a possibility, yes.
Interesting. So what about the allegations that Michael Johnson from the Boys and Girls Club is making? I'm sure by now you've heard that he's trying to connect his criticism of you and this rapid...
Let me just say this. We've had some disagreements on how this should be funded. They've been worked out.
Uh-huh.
Let's just take it from there.
Well, what about the accusations about the audit? Has that been worked out?
Yes, that has. I think, first of all, Michael misspoke when he said audit. It's a review. It is a review that is required by HUD And Michael Johnson and I have discussed it, and he acknowledges that that it's proper and it's in everybody's best interest, particularly the block grant program, to carry that out.
What about the debate? Some people on Facebook were talking about the city's just crumbling and falling to pieces, and that we need more police officers now. And you've said you didn't really think that we needed more police officers.
I'm not sure that we need more police officers.
Right.
And I think what we've got to do is we've got to get to some of the underlying issues when we're talking about the challenges of poverty, unemployment, and getting people great jobs. That has a lot to do with those challenges.
But Madison could do everything in the world correctly, which no city does, but you can always strive for perfection. And we'd still probably have drive-by shooting and violence because, you know, people, gangbangers don't necessarily observe city limits. So they don't go, oh, this is a nice place. I won't shoot this house up. You know, people are fighting over drugs. People are fighting over a variety of things. People come from all over the place, you know, to do what they do. Isn't some of this a little impossible to deal with considering the other cities in the area that are dealing with circumstances that are much bigger and more troublesome than ours?
Well, you know, there's a book that was published a couple of years ago, Triumph of the Cities. And the author makes the observation, I think I still remember it was on page 70 or 71.
Whoa.
The author made the observation that when a city is economically successful, it is always going to have poor people, and it's always going to be subject to stress. And the reason is, first, that poor people are going to rightfully come to that city looking for employment and looking for better jobs, and there's going to be people following them to exploit them. And this is something that happens all over the world, in all economically successful cities.
How do you balance affordable housing with some areas along Raymond Road and other parts of the city where a series of apartment buildings get older? People find affordable housing there, but problems follow along with it, and it changes the course of the neighborhood without really the housing stock changing much. And I think you know what I'm talking about. How does the city kind of prevent that from happening as far as, you know, certain areas suddenly having massive amounts of violence or serious problems? It kind of seems like when some of the problems at Allied Drive got cleaned up, suddenly it just moved to another spot.
It's going to happen as areas age and deteriorate with time. And then the challenge, for one thing, is focused on really good building inspection programs to make sure that the properties are kept up as they age, and to watch for changes in usage. For example, if an area was designed for young singles or young couples without children, and then you end up having families with kids moving in, you got some original design problems there because it wasn't designed for kids, and that's a problem.
What happens in a city planning? I know this is going to sound like a silly question, but I often wonder, how did Prairie Road, for instance, and Hammersley become an area where they put up a whole bunch of duplexes where there were no garages for people to put their stuff? All they looked alike. They became run down very quickly in their lifespan. I've watched that deteriorate over the years living on the West Side. How does something like that happen?
Well, for one thing, the stuff with those those semi-garages, those stalls.
Uh-huh.
It's an example of, you know, someone, developer, trying to save money by not building real garages. And then what happens is the that kind of design was very susceptible to deterioration. And, of course, now, generations later, we're paying the price.
Did some that sort of planning change when you became mayor in 1973?
I don't know that we were able to get to it immediately. But we started making some design changes. And, of course, when we do this, we get a lot of outcries about having tougher design requirements and building codes. But you see what happens if you don't have that kind of supervision of the construction process.
All right, stand by. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin with us at Sly'sOffice.com. Summer is usually a great time for food choices for people in Wisconsin. Backyard gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores brimming with fresh produce. But for a lot of people, they don't have those choices because school is not in session. A lot of kids get their nutrition during the school year, so we need your help. St. Vincent de Paul has a food pantry that gives your neighbor in need some of the same choices you have. But to keep it going, we need your help, your donations, support the food pantry. And you can do one of a couple things. Drop off an extra bag of groceries from the store or your local farmer's market. Also, a $50 cash donation feeds a family of five for a week. You can organize a food drive, whatever it takes to keep that food pantry going this summer while the kids are at home. Let's do what we can. Here's what you do. You contact St. Vincent de Paul at svdpmadison.org. That's svdpmadison.org. Let's work on this together. And we're back at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us again, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. We're talking about the city. Let's talk about the other end of the spectrum and prosperity. And you talk about prosperity having a flip side to it. Because I pay attention to news a lot in Canada, I've been watching what's happened in cities like Toronto and Vancouver that are places a lot of high-tech people are moving to with incredible salaries, and people are being priced out of their apartments and houses. It's literally, they've kind of become unfriendly to a place to raise a family. And it's changed the music scene. A lot of places that used to be music venues that kind of made it an eclectic feel, they've disappeared. Are you concerned that that could happen in Madison?
Well, our latest housing report identifies that as a serious problem. Let's go back over the last decade. As we approached the recession, we were not building enough housing. We hit the recession, the combination of the recession and local conditions was such that we hardly added to the housing stock at all. Then if you look at what transpired starting around 2013, after I was back in office for 2 months, you start to see a tremendous increase in the number of units. And that did something to help us in regards to vacancy rates. It helped us in regards to accommodating the large number of people moving to Madison. Well, as we go into the future, this creates more demands. One of the things we're very concerned about is that on a much smaller scale, that we not become like San Francisco, where you've got an enormous growth in population, tremendous shortage of housing for middle-income, low-income people, and the price of housing is just outrageous. So one of the things that we're working on now is how to formulate more housing, more affordable housing, and get that inventory up, and a variety of kinds of inventories, because specifically for millennials, they're not necessarily interested in owning single-family detached dwellings. So that's one of our targets.
So where would that go?
Well, we've still got areas that are about to be developed on the periphery of the city. And, of course, we're always looking at infill. And we, you know, you've seen what's happened on East Washington Avenue.
I have. I often wonder whether the corridor on West Washington Avenue at Park Street, all the way up to the Capitol, well, not necessarily all the way up to the Capitol, but at least up to Bedford, is underutilized.
I would not be surprised if there's some of the old semi-industrial sites on Park Street that will also be converted to housing in the next few years.
No, Park Street's really becoming kind of a gem, isn't it?
Park Street is a very attractive area. It meets all those requirements in regards to location, in regards to all the amenities around it.
What about the future for places like Braxton Place, you know, where we have subsidized housing? Is that...
We just discussed on Monday morning a new neighborhood plan for that whole Monona Bay Triangle area. It has not been examined since 1989. And so we'll be coming in with a recommendation to the city council to take a look at that entire area,
you know,
that you just described.
I didn't move to Madison until after that portion of the Greenbush neighborhood was down. But do you ever think to yourself, and I don't know if you're nostalgic, you know, the governor accused you of being a throwback to the 60s, but, and I can't remember if that was still, if the Greenbush was still around when you came to college here, but
it was not. It was an empty field.
Wouldn't you kind of love to see the Greenbush recreated?
Well, that's what we're trying to do in some of the newer areas in terms of getting that kind of intimacy, that kind of neighborhood feeling.
When you moved here in, I don't know, early 60s, your parents sent you to college up here. You know, could you ever have dreamed living in a high-rise building that's thousands of dollars a month rent? I mean, where are all these people coming from with all this money that can go to the University of Wisconsin and live in buildings that fancy?
Well,
and I assume you didn't live in a luxurious place when you moved to Madison.
Well, if you start looking at income levels, they're rising in Madison. And so in terms of people being able to afford 25 to 30% of their income for housing, which is considered acceptable, that's what's working.
Let me finally ask you today about you sort of floating the idea of shrinking the city council. Your predecessor wrote a piece in Isthmus saying he didn't think it was a good idea. He said inevitably that would lead to a full-time council and would be very expensive, that a part-time council shrunk to that level could never handle the constituency work.
Well, we are an anomaly in the United States. Most cities are.
Isn't that a good thing?
I'm not so sure, and I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But most cities our size have a city council of 6 to 8 people. Now, we just brought up a matter today that's going to be introduced, and as part of our discussion, it is going to be referred to 10 committees. And in part, we have all those committees so that every member of the city council gets a shot at it. And I'm just beginning to wonder that actually with so many members of the council, are we not making more work for ourselves?
The other thing that former Mayor Cheslevich complained about is that the trial balloon that you floated didn't really include input from the council. It was a committee to study it, but you would pick the members.
When in the history of this city, if we want to be a traditionalist, in the history of this city, whenever the the design, the size, the powers of the mayor and the council have been examined. It's always been done by citizen committees, a committee of citizens, appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the council.
Is part of this because you've had such a rocky relationship with the city council?
No,
and I'm not attributing that to you. I'm just saying it's been contentious at times.
No, it's my asking the question, why do we have some of these problems of functionality? And it may be that the council is simply too large, or it may be that we have basically changed the council from what was originally adopted, which was a council that was a volunteer group that worked for an honorarium, and now we're working, we've made a decision without any public input to have a part-time council. I just think that the public ought to discuss it.
What do you think about the way Milwaukee is situated with a full-time council?
I think that that's something we ought to consider. I'm not ruling out going back to a volunteer council working for an honorarium and getting away from what we've got now, which is a part-time council.
Are you able to kind of observe how the council interacts with their constituents, you aside, and how that process works? Are you as mayor able to observe that?
I do, and what I see is that a good deal of the time it works, but there's also instances where I'm convinced we're actually creating more work for everybody and more time-consuming meetings that could be consolidated.
Final question. It was a contentious time when we had a fight over where to put MATC. Remember that fight?
Yep.
You know, I'm old enough that I can remember that fight. What do you think about the fact that there won't be an MATC in downtown Madison at all, or Madison College now?
Well, I think when in 1980-81, where they made the decision to go out to Truax, they basically sealed the fate of a downtown campus, that eventually this day was going to happen, that the efficiency of being downtown was going to disappear and something like this would happen.
Do you think that I have no problem with that building being turned into some sort of mixed-use hotel, saving some of it, although the more interesting architecture was actually torn down a number of years ago. But you think there ever is going to be a need for a downtown high school in Madison ever again?
Probably not. It could, but I doubt it.
East High School, close enough to that probably wouldn't happen.
Even if we're successful in getting more families downtown with more kids, I doubt that we're going to see a downtown high school.
All right. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin, thanks for coming on with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Sly.
All right.
Take care.
Have a great day. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin at SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.